Okay, you guys ready? Sorry about that.
All right, tonight I'd like to pick up in a new book. I'd like to pick up in the book of Proverbs. This is a very unique book. As a matter of fact, most of the Proverbs here are written by Solomon. But what's interesting, if you go back to 1 Kings chapter 4, we read that Solomon had written over 3,000 Proverbs, or had written 3,000 Proverbs, and he wrote 1,005 songs. But we don't get into his Proverbs until we get to chapter 10 of Proverbs. And then the last two chapters aren't written by Solomon. Chapter 30 is written by a sage by the name of Agur. And when you get to chapter 31, it's actually written by a woman who writes some wise advice to her son Lemuel, and her description of an excellent wife. And so, long story short, if you basically just count the Proverbs that are listed here, as far as Solomon is concerned, there are only about 588, at least that's what I counted, Proverbs. But if he had written 3,000 Proverbs, which were told in Kings, then that means we're missing over 2,400 of his Proverbs. And I just mentioned that in passing because the book of Proverbs is something that I've really strived to read, study, meditate upon. As a matter of fact, of all the books in the Bible when I was younger, I actually memorized four books of Proverbs, and I wanted to memorize the entire book, but I got sidetracked in so many other things. But I've often thought to myself, if there's one book I could just memorize, it would be the Proverbs, because there's so much wisdom in it. I mean, from chapters 1 through 9, I mean, Solomon basically talks about the value of wisdom and knowledge and common sense, and the rewards of wisdom, and he speaks of the instructions of a father and the pitfalls of immorality and the value of parents and their counsel and their advice. And he talks about the commendation of wisdom, and he admonishes to stay away from folly. And he also talks about the foolish and the naive. I think it was Billy Graham also who one time said something to the effect that he reads like 5 Psalms a day to keep himself connected with God. And he also reads at least one chapter of Proverbs to keep him in a position where he can really relate to his fellow man, because that's what this proverb does. I mean, Proverbs deals with truth-telling, it deals with honesty and integrity and immorality and decency. It speaks of liars and gossips and cheats and thieves and adulterers and fornicators. It speaks of prostitutes and harlots, the righteous and the wicked, and of drunkards and of gluttons and fools and folly and sluggards and diligence and hope and despair and anger and resentment. I mean, it just goes on and on. He speaks of greed and selfishness and hate and love. I mean, it's just jam-packed with a lot of nitty-gritty, sage, wise advice. And he also speaks of using prudence and judgment and integrity with dealing with money. As a matter of fact, he uses the word fool some 40 times. He uses the word wise no less than 69 times. And one thing I've found, too, is that almost every culture in history has developed a collection of wise sayings or proverbs, which have been condensed down into tidbits of wisdom. And as a matter of fact, there's an old saying that says that basically a proverb is nothing more than the wisdom of many that's expressed by the wit of one person. And I've read and I've studied a number of these different proverbs that are out of the Bible. I mean, there are German proverbs, Irish proverbs, Arabian proverbs, Russian proverbs, Italian proverbs, Spanish proverbs, Chinese proverbs. There's even American proverbs. I mean, I've read a lot about, Poor Richard's Almanac, where Ben Franklin, I mean, he come up with proverbs like waste not, want not, or early to bed, early to rise, so makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And I think to myself, if there was one book that I would like to be able to find in history that's been missing, it would be those 2,400 proverbs. We don't have what Solomon said. But anyway, we'll go ahead and just read this first chapter. I think because we're going so late, I don't think we'll be able to get through two chapters. But let's just go ahead and break it down as we're reading this. Beginning with verse 1 of chapter 1 of Proverbs, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, the king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction for wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, and to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and the riddle. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." You know, before we go any further, you know, he's basically laying out for us the purpose of this book. And the purpose of this book is to give instruction and wisdom and insight and understanding to the youth, to the young, as well as to the naive, to the simple-minded, and as well as to the wise men. Because if you break it down, he says to know wisdom and instruction. Well, you know, you almost have to identify or define your terms. I mean, Solomon speaks of wisdom, and if you look up wisdom in a dictionary, it's basically says that it's an understanding of what is right and what is true and what is lasting and insightful, and it's using common sense and sound of good judgment. But you know, in the book of James, we are told that there's two kinds of wisdom. He said that there's a wisdom from God or a wisdom from above. As a matter of fact, let me just read it. In the third chapter of James, James says this, beginning with verse 13, says, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds and gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant so as to lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic. For where there is jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there is disorder of every evil thing. But wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, and unwavering without hypocrisy." And basically, he's saying, you know, there's two kinds of wisdom. There's a wisdom of the world. And he says this, the wisdom of the world, it's earthly, it's natural, it's demonic. In other words, it's humanistic in this nature, in this sense. Worldly wisdom will say, you know what, it's okay to steal or to fudge or to cheat because everybody does it. Now, that's worldly wisdom, right? Or what's wrong with fornication or adultery or homosexuality? Everybody's doing it. The times have changed. You need to get with the times. I mean, you could just go on and on and on, but where's this wisdom coming from? The wisdom of the world will tell you, you know what, you're pregnant, you're not married, or the child's going to be handicapped or challenged. Just go ahead and do away with the child. That's worldly wisdom. That's earthly. That's demonic in nature. But the wisdom from above, it says that that's totally different. It's the wisdom from above, it says it's first pure. In other words, it's not self-seeking. It's not self-centered. It's pure in the eyes of God. And it's peaceable and it's gentle and reasonable and full of mercy and good fruits and unwavering without hypocrisy. So I just wanted to say that up front because Solomon is talking constantly about wisdom throughout this book. And you got to almost identify your terms because wisdom to one person may be one thing and a different, totally different thing to another person. But we're talking about biblical wisdom here. Wisdom from God. I mean, wisdom that is just characterized by what's true, what's right, what's lasting, what's full of good judgment and common sense and sound in this nature. That's from God. And basically you could say wisdom too is having the ability to apply knowledge correctly. I mean, all this involves wisdom. I think this is what we need more than ever before. If I could, I would require every politician and every spiritual leader to read this book day in and day out. Read it day in and day out because I'm telling you, he speaks of all kinds of things where the rubber meets the road in terms of honesty and integrity and doing the right thing and staying away from evil or evil people or the wrong crowd. That's his instruction. And you know, he says in verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding. I mean, if we're going to discern, I mean, that's to perceive what or recognize or comprehend what's right or what's good, where a person's motives are coming from or their attitudes. He says to receive instruction in wise behavior. Does anybody's Bible say instead of instruction is to receive discipline? Anybody's translation? Because I think that that's what it's referring to. And we're told in Hebrews chapter 12 that everyone that gives their life to Christ is going to be disciplined. They're going to have to go through a discipline period. They're going to have to go through a situation where God is going to test them, to fashion them, to shape them, to mold them until they become like tempered steel. But a lot of times what's happening today is people are not going to receive instruction or discipline because they shun the things of God because there's a cost involved and they have to die to themselves and make Jesus Christ their Lord instead of being their own Lord. Yeah.
Also, I would reflect occasionally on the discipline that I went through when God, when I decided I was going to follow Him wholeheartedly. There was a period of about 2 years that it was just excruciating. I think God was testing me and developing me and driving me to know nothing but Him. And I was young, a lot younger then, and I'm thinking, you know, if I came to know Christ in my age now, I don't think I can go through that kind of discipline again.
Yeah.
And yeah. The older you get, the less pliable you are, I guess.
Right, right. That's why Solomon also says in the 12th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes, to remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and you no longer enjoy living. I think back on those times too, and when I first became a Christian, I went through a tremendous... it was like going through boot camp, only this was a lot longer and a lot more difficult in a lot of ways. But what's interesting is that there's in the Apocrypha books, there's a book called the Ecclesiasticus, otherwise known as Sirach. The divine inspiration has been questioned about it. It's in the Catholic Bible, Douay Version Bible, the Jerusalem Bible. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in those books, even if you don't accept the divine inspiration of them. They're well worth reading. But I'll just read you a little portion of what it says in the book of Sirach, because it says, "My son, if you aspire to serve the Lord, prepare yourself for an ordeal." Right? He says, "Be sincere of heart and be steadfast, and do not be alarmed when disaster comes. Cling to him and do not leave him, so that you may be honored in the end of your days. Whatever happens to you, accept it. And in the uncertainties of your humble state, be patient, since gold is tested in fire, and the chosen men in the furnace of humiliation. Trust him, and he will uphold you. Follow a straight path and hope in him. And you who fear the Lord, wait for his mercy. Do not turn aside in case you fall. You who fear the Lord, trust him, and you will not be balked of your reward. You who fear the Lord, hope for good things, for everlasting happiness and mercy. Look at the generations of old and see whoever trusted in the Lord and was put to shame, or whoever feared him steadfastly and was left forsaken, or whoever called out to him and was ignored. For the Lord is compassionate and merciful. He forgives sins and saves in the day of distress. Woe to faint hearts and listless hands, and to the sinner who treads both two paths. Woe to the listless heart that has no faith, for such will have no protection. Woe to you who have lost the will to endure. What will you do at the Lord's visitation?" I just read a little portion of that. There's actually a book in there in the Apocryphal books called the Book of Wisdom. If you ever get an opportunity, read that whole book and read that book of Sirach, because I'm telling you, it is packed full of wisdom. Even if you question its divine inspiration, there's so much wisdom in there to be gleaned, and there's so much that just goes right along with the other wisdom books of the Bible. But that, it's basically saying, what's going to happen when you get serious with God? He's going to test you. He's going to try you. He's going to fashion you. He's going to make you, because what is he doing? He's fashioning and shaping us and molding us in the images of his son, and that's not an easy thing to undergo. But here's the thing, if we just be patient, we just accept it, we just believe in God, we just trust him, we continue to follow him, we continue to obey him, then that's the instruction that it's talking about here. And afterwards, it's really going to reap its rewards. Because when he says in that verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, that's the discipline. All right. And he says in verse 3, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, equity. You know what this is? This is God talking to us. It's like he's talking especially to young people. Because, let's face it, when you're young, you're dumb. It just goes hand in hand, doesn't it? It just is, because young people just don't have the experience that they need to cultivate the kind of wisdom that they need, right? I mean, it just goes hand in hand. I mean, I was no exception. I'm sure nobody else in this room was exception. We're not born wise. We're not born with all this experience. We have to learn. A lot of times we learn the hard way, you know, but it's almost as though God is saying, look, you can avoid an awful lot. Even though you're young and you're dumb, you can avoid an awful lot of pain in your life and dire consequences in your life if you just listen to sound wisdom. Just listen to what I'm saying. And that's what he's basically telling us here. He says to give prudence to the naive. What is prudence? That's basically something where you can be able to perceive what's right, what's wrong, what to do, what not to do. A prudent person is going to be able to look at things and say, you know what? What are the consequences of this going to be? All right, that's a prudent person. And that's something that's really needed today. Because, let's face it, I can hardly think of anything in life that doesn't have consequences to it. Can you? If you come to this Bible study instead of watching TV, it's going to have a consequence in your life. If you sit and watch TV rather than read your Bible, that will have a consequence. If you just sit like a couch potato, you know, year in and year out, and watch 58 hours of TV a week, that's going to have a consequence. And the person who goes out there and disciplines themselves and runs every day and jogs every day or works out, that's going to have a consequence. I mean, I can't think of hardly anything off the top of my head that does not have some kind of consequence. And so the prudent person is going to look at something and say, what are going to be the consequences here? A stupid person, a naive person, a foolish person is going to get themselves drunk and smash and get behind a car and not think of the consequences. But a prudent person will see this and say, no, I'm not going to do that. See, that's what I'm talking about. Just name it. Just throw it out there. Everything has a consequence. He says to give prudence to naive, to the youth knowledge and discretion. If you go back to the 11th chapter of the book of Isaiah, he talks about the seven spirits of God. And he says it's the spirit of the Lord, the spirit of wisdom, the spirit of knowledge, the spirit of understanding, the spirit of strength, the spirit of counsel, and the spirit of fear of the Lord. And so it's interesting to me that wisdom is actually a spirit. And you can read that in the book of Revelation, where John talks about the seven spirits of God standing before the throne. You would think that wisdom itself would be a part of God's character, which it is, part of his character, part of his nature, but he has actually fashioned it into a spirit. And the same thing with knowledge. Paul told us that in the last days, men will be forever learning, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. Look at how knowledge is just exploding exponentially today. But do people really have a sound knowledge in terms of life and meaning and purpose? They just don't. I mean, if you really want knowledge about what really matters in life, this is what he's saying. You got to turn to God, because God's going to teach you knowledge and discretion. And also that verse 5, it says this book is not just for the young and dumb. This book is for the wise man, because it says a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. What does it mean to acquire?
Obtain.
Yeah, there's got to be an effort there. There's got to be something that you've got to exert yourself in order to acquire. And so if you're going to acquire wise counsel, you're going to be a man of understanding. You really have to apply yourself. And what I mean by that is this. Many years ago, as a matter of fact, Gail was in as a reading specialist, went to some seminar, and I remember this statistic that they said that most people, when they get out of school, whether it's high school or college, that 80% of the people that graduate never read again. And then the people that do read after college, 80% of them are women. And what they primarily read is novels, romantic novels, mysteries, and the National Enquirer. So what does that say about us in terms of knowledge? We really have to decide, you know what? What's really important here? I want to learn something. I want to learn something that's going to teach me about God. And it doesn't have to be a religious book. I'm always devouring books or trying to watch films on nature, because I'm just enthralled at God's creation. And I just feel like, man, isn't this absolutely incredible? It gives me a glimpse of the mind of God. It's staggering, the imagination, to see his power, to see his wisdom, to see his understanding. That just teaches you stuff. And so you begin to learn stuff, you begin to know stuff. But look at the world. I mean, I look at all the books. I go into Borders Books, to Barnes and Nobles. There's thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of books. I mean, sometimes I wish I could just take all that information and just pour it into my head. But you have to be extremely selective if you're going to become a knowledgeable person, because there's so much out there that's just absolutely worthless. So you have to be selective. But, you know, he says here, to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and the riddle. So he's saying here, this is why this book is written. Why God is giving us to us. For what? To understand a proverb. In essence, what is a proverb? A proverb is just a short, brief saying that expresses a basic truth of wisdom and common sense. Also, it says a figure. I don't know if some of the Bibles use that same word, but he says in verse 6, to understand a proverb and a figure. What's a figure?
An equation.
Or, put it this way, a figure could be, let's just say, the Lamb of God. Now, that's a figure, but the wise man is going to know what that figure represents, what that figure is saying. The Lamb of God points to Christ as the sacrificial lamb that died in our place. See, the Bible is filled with figures, and the wise man will be able to see what it's saying, or the words that are wise in the riddles. What's a riddle?
Short story or with a hidden meaning to it?
Yeah, it's kind of a conundrum or a perplexing mystery or a puzzle that requires much effort to solve. There's only one place in the Bible that a riddle is mentioned other than right here. Anybody remember what the riddle was? When we went through Judges, if I'm not mistaken, it's the 14th chapter of Judges. That's where Samson was attacked by a lion, and he tore the lion in half, tore it to pieces, and then he comes back a few days later, and there was honeycomb in the body of the lion, and he scoops up the honey, and he starts just licking it up and eating it, and then he gives some of the honey to his parents, didn't tell him where he got the honey. And it was he was going down for his wedding feast, his wedding ceremony, and they basically, you know, they didn't have the kind of entertainment we do today, so, you know, they had jesters or comics or stand-up comedians, or and they propounded riddles. And so Samson said, you know, to the Philistines, he said to 30 of them, look, if you can get this riddle, I'll give you a change of clothes each. If you can't get the riddle, then you give me a change of clothes each. And they said, well, go ahead, propound your riddle. So he said, out of the eater came forth something to eat, and out of the strong came forth something sweet. And, of course, they could never get the riddle. But here's what's interesting. If you put that in the spiritual level, take it to the spiritual level. We're told in Corinthians that the things of God are foolishness to the natural mind. So it's going to take the Spirit of God to see what it's saying, what the riddle is saying, and you apply it spiritually. But they found out the meaning of the riddle because, you know, the Philistines kept threatening Samson's would-be wife until she just kept whining and crying and complaining for 7 days until she finally broke him with her tears. He told them the riddle. Then they said, what's stronger than the lion? What's sweeter than honey? And he said, if you hadn't plowed my heifer, you wouldn't have got the riddle. So he would end up paying the debt. But the thing is, if you take that to a spiritual level, you can see a lot in it. In other words, what's interesting to me, Samson tore up that lion. In Psalm 10, the wicked are referred to as lions. In 1 Peter, Satan is referred to as a roaring lion seeking whom he can devour. In Proverbs, we are told that the righteous are as bold as lions. The wicked flee when no one's pursuing them, but the righteous are as bold as lions. And also, Jesus Christ is referred to as the Lion of Judah in the book of Revelation. So what I'm saying is this. A wise person is going to take all this into consideration and say, you know what? You could look at this riddle, apply it spiritually, and you could say, the lion represented Satan because he's a roaring lion. He comes at Samson. Samson's spirit-filled. He tears up this lion. And so you can begin to see that when his riddle, he said, out of the eater came forth something to eat. Remember when we went through the book of Numbers, we read about the 12 spies and how 10 of them came back and gave a bad report, but Joshua and Caleb gave a good report, and all the people were saying, well, we're not going into the land. It's full of giants, and they're going to tear us up, and they're going to kill our kids, and all so on and so forth. And Caleb said, no. He says, let's just believe God. He says, these giants are going to be food for us. And what that meant was basically, hey, listen, if we go in there and we trust God and believe God, God is going to give us the victory over them. And when we get the victory over them, they're going to be food for us in this respect, that it's going to enable our faith to grow. You see, the Bible says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Well, if we resist the devil and we get the victory, then we grow in our faith. And then he says, out of the eater came forth something to eat. And out of the strong came forth something sweet. Isn't this what Jesus Christ said? He says, take upon you my yoke, because my yoke is sweet, my burden is light. So you know what? What I'm saying, I know that I'm rambling here, but I'm using this as an example as far as a riddle. Right? There's so many different things in the Bible. There are symbolisms. There are figures. There are figures of speech. There's metaphors. There's analogies that the wise person, if he studies and he reads and he reads and he reads and he gets to have a working knowledge of the Bible, then he can see things clearer and clearer with the spiritual eye. So that's what this is about. One of the reasons why God has given us this book of Proverbs, he says in that verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. Well, when he says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, we're also told that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And what does that mean? What does it mean to fear God?
Know that there are consequences.
Yeah.
He sees it all.
Good. In other words, if you go into a store and you feel like just stealing something, taking a five-finger discount and just sticking something in your pocket and walking out and not paying for it, well, the wise person is going to say, you know what? I may get away with this really easy, but I'm going to have to account to God for this. So that's fear of God. That's fear of the Lord. That's the beginning of wisdom. You know how to act, is what it's saying. But he also says here, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's when true knowledge comes into the picture. When you fear God, you begin to see through things for what they are, and you begin to understand things for what they are. So he says, fools despise wisdom and instruction. Isn't that what's happening all over this place today? You know, you try to tell people about God, about what's right, what's wrong, and they just basically despise you. And they're going to turn you off, and they're not going to investigate. I mean, that's what a fool will do. Anyway, let's just read this, verses 8 through 19. It says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath on your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And if they say, 'Come with us,' and let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us, and we shall have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors." Now, before we go any further, let's just break some of this down now, too, because this is very significant in what Solomon is saying. He says that verse 8, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching." What Paul writes in Timothy, he gives us 19 different adjectives to describe what men are going to be like in the last days. You know, he says they're going to be brutal, they're going to be reckless, they're going to be God haters, they're going to be lovers of pleasure rather than God. They're going to be all of these different things that he described. But he also said that they are going to be disobedient to parents. And parents stand in the very place of God. And did you know, back, if you go back to Exodus chapter 21, there's a couple laws on the books where God says this. He says this in Exodus chapter 21, verse 15. He says, "He who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." And then he says in verse 17, "He who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Okay, now obviously the punishment doesn't apply today. But what God was saying in a very, very graphic way, what our tutor and our teacher are telling us in that, is that if we curse our father and mother, if we strike our father and mother, it's striking out at God. And that was grounds for execution. But what that execution was pointing to was, if you have a life that's characterized by that, then you are going to end up in hell. You're going to end up in eternal death. And that says a lot to me as far as you know, what God thinks of not honoring our parents. He's saying this, your parents stand in place of God, and we're to listen to them as far as their instruction goes, because parents, even if they're not saved, even if they don't go to church, even if they're atheists, don't believe in God, they still have the child's best interests at heart, and they're going to be giving him wise counsel. All right. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes you've got some totally demented people that are parents, and all they do is they abuse their kids. They're so much dysfunctional. They teach their kids to do all the wrong things. But I'm talking about a parent, two parents that love their children. They're going to have the best interests of their children at heart. But the very fact that that's on the books, that if you strike your mother or father, it should be put to death, or if you even curse your mother and father. I remember years ago, before I was even a Christian, when I got back from Vietnam, I started working with this young kid, and he was always, always just being really syrupy to me in terms of, "Oh, yes, Mr. Hunt. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir." Everything was, "Sir, sir, sir." And it was just, I just got annoyed with that because it seemed so phony. And then I found out that this guy, he would talk to his mother by just cussing her out, cursing her. He would just use all kinds of foul language and cursing out his mother. And when I found that out, I wasn't even a Christian, but the next time he called me sir, I said, "Hey man, don't ever call me sir again. I know what you're really like." I says, "If you talk to your mother the way I heard you talk to your mother, then what you say to me, it means, is meaningless. Don't ever call me that again." And you know, unfortunately for that guy, the Lord took him. To this day, I even pray for him that the Lord would have been merciful to him, but he was just driving his car one night and just flipped his car over and killed him. I think I was only like 18, 19 years old, but I see his mother all the time. I see his mother, and it's a sad thing that here's a kid that cursed his father and mother, or basically his mother anyway, and shows that kind of disrespect. Well, you know, he just brought judgment on himself. It says in verse 9, "Indeed, you are a graceful wreath on your head and ornaments about your..." You know, what he's saying here? He's saying here, when you listen to your father and mother's instruction, what does he say happens? Their instructions are a graceful wreath on your head and ornaments about your neck. In other words, when you obey them, follow their instruction, it's clear to everybody to see. I mean, I work in a grocery store, and I deal with people day in and day out. And you can see Some children are just absolutely unruly. They're just obnoxious. They yell and scream for what they want. But then every once in a while you see a parent in there with a four or five children that are so well behaved, everybody's just taken back by their behavior. I mean, it's just so pleasant to see a mother with a brood of young kids that are really, really well behaved. Anyway, in verse 10 it says, "My son, if sinners entice you, did not consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even the whole as they go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us, and we shall have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread a baited net in their sight, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of his possessors." You know what? Basically, Paul tells us this in a nutshell. This is distilled down. Paul distilled this down in saying, hey, bad company corrupts good morals. That's what it boils down to. And I've said this many, many times, man. You know, show me the type of people that you hang around, and I'll show you the type of person you are. If you're going to hang around with thieves, you're going to become a thief. If you're going to hang around with blasphemers, you're going to become a blasphemer. If you're going to hang around with the immoral, you become immoral. If you're going to hang around with liars and swindlers and cheats, that's what you're going to become. You're going to hang around with criminals, I'll see you behind bars. It just goes hand in hand. And God is basically saying, hey man, stay away from these people, even if they entice you. And he's talking to young people here, and there's a tremendous amount of peer pressure today, isn't there? There just is on young people. But they want to belong. They want to fit in. They want to feel like they're part of something, that they want it. The pressure is tremendous. But, you know, with the grace of God, sometimes you just need to turn on your heel and walk away from it, even if it means you have to be all alone. You're going to be at least with peace. You're going to be at peace with God. And guess what? You're going to actually show leadership. You're going to show a spine. You're going to show some backbone and some spunk. And guess what? It won't be too much longer before people will start following you. That's just the flat out truth of it. And you know what he says here? What does he mean here in that verse 17? Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. What does that mean? It means this. If a bird sees that you're setting a trap for them, even a dumb animal, it's going to avoid that trap. But these people are stupider than dumb animals, because it says here in verse 18, but they lie in wait for their own blood. If they're going to rob, mug, loot, kill somebody for their possessions, he says what's going to happen. It's going to come back on them 100-fold, because he says here they ambush their own lives. So are the ways that everyone who gains by violence, it takes away the life of his possessor. Just go down to prison. See how many guys are down there because of this very thing. Their lives are taken away. In verse 20 it says, wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts up her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be sated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. You know, this is, to me, it's profound in its simplicity. But you got to look at it. This is God speaking. And basically, what is he saying? This is wisdom that's calling out. Give me an example here. It says, wisdom shouts in the streets. She lifts up her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. I'll give you an example. All right? Look at HIV. Look at AIDS. Look at sexually transmitted diseases. Look at the gonorrhea, the syphilis, all of it, right? The chlamydia. It's become epidemic today. It's become pandemic. People by the millions and millions are coming down with these diseases, all right? Now, this is wisdom's calling out in the street. She's lifting up her voice in the square. She's calling out in the streets at the entrance of the gate. She utters her sayings. In other words, look at the consequences of this. But how many people are listening to the wisdom? I'll give you another example. Wisdom says this, don't drink and drive. Well, there used to be a guy who came to the study all the time, and then he got away from the Lord, started doing his own thing, started getting drunk all the time, and then he went out one night. He was completely intoxicated, inebriated, and he got into a horrendous wreck, and he ended up killing people. And he ended up going to prison. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that wisdom was calling in the streets. Wisdom was speaking to him. Wisdom was trying to get him to pay attention, to do the right thing, to do the wise thing. But then, by completely ignoring wisdom and just completely doing your own thing, look what happened to him. Look what it says here in verse 22. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. It says, turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit upon you, and I will make my words known to you. But you know what? It takes an effort. You have to turn to wisdom, to God. And he says, turn to my reproof. The reproof is basically, God is going to rebuke us in terms of, okay, this is what you got to get away from this behavior. And then, but now look what happens when you don't listen to wisdom. It says, because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. You neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. Now, God doesn't laugh at anybody's calamity. But what it's saying here is that you're going to reap what you sow. You're going to keep sowing to the wind. You're going to reap the whirlwind. And that's what it's saying here. When you neglect God, when you neglect his word, neglect his counsel, neglect what he's saying, then we're just going to reap the consequences. Didn't I tell you that earlier? Think of one thing that doesn't have a consequence. I can hardly think of a thing that doesn't have some kind of consequence to it. And so if we just completely spurn what God is saying and just discard it altogether, well then eventually it's going to come upon us. If we just continue to live a life in crime, when time and time and time again, the Spirit of God is saying, man, repent of this, turn from this, don't do this. There's going to come a day when you end up, what? You're going to end up being arrested, being apprehended, getting a long prison sentence. If you're lucky, you might end up getting killed. How many guys are in gangs? All right, they find their affiliation with gangs. And as far as their gang membership is concerned, they're dealing in drugs, they're dealing in violence, they're dealing in crime, they're dealing in all these things, and wisdom is constantly trying to get their attention, to turn from their evil ways. They didn't listen to their parents, they won't listen to the cops, they won't listen to their teachers. They're just hell-bent on doing their own thing, they're just rebels, and what's going to happen? He said in that verse 26, I will also laugh at your calamity, I will mock when your dread comes, to when your dread comes like a storm, and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. It's going to come upon you suddenly. It's just going to happen. The Bible says, hey, be not deceived. God is not mocked. A man's going to reap what he sows. And people think that they can just continue to live a life of crime and total disregard for God and his word and his ordinances and his statutes, and they're going to get away with it. It's just not going to happen. You know, it's as foolish as jumping off a 10-story building thinking, well, I can fly. Gravity's not going to affect me. Well, that's just completely asinine. And then he says in verse 28, it says, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. It's not that they want to repent. They're crying out because of the consequences of their actions. But, you know, even there, even if they go to jail, even if they go to prison, even if they have this against them, God can still work through it. He can salvage anything if they would just now turn. But a lot of people today, they just want God's help to get them out of the bind that they got themselves into by being disobedient. And that's not going to get them over. It says in verse 29, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. What's the fear of the Lord? I just said it. You know that you're going to have to answer to God for what we do. Choosing the fear of the Lord, I mean, if you feel like stealing from your boss or cheating on your spouse or whatever, if you choose the fear of the Lord, you're going to do the right thing. And it says here in verse 30, they would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. This is what we see. We see so often. What's happening? I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, you know, they had this big shindig down in San Francisco. It was called the annual leather celebration or whatever. There was so much perversion going on there. I mean, people were walking around naked and they were actually having sex in the street. Well, when these people come down with AIDS or some kind of disease or something of that nature, it's because they spurn God's reproof. They just spurn God. And so what does it say is going to happen to them? Verse 31, so they will eat the fruit of their own way. They will be sated with their own devices. For the waywardness and naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. How many people have ended up being like that? Everybody on death row has ended up in this position. It says, but he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. So in other words, if we're obeying God, if we're living for God, then what happens to us? We live securely. In other words, even a lot of these white-collar criminals, I mean, they may feel like, well, I'm just getting away with this and I'm raking in the millions. But in the end, what happens to these people? Look what happened to that guy in Enron. I mean, he was trying to go down constantly saying that he didn't do anything wrong, but he knew he did wrong, because what happened to him? He just ended up dying in prison from heart failure because of the toll that this stress took upon his body. You know what? He didn't live securely, and he wasn't at ease from the dread of evil. See what happens? That's what happens to people when they just are hell-bent on just doing the wrong way, doing the wrong thing, is that the calamity comes upon. Anyway, anybody have anyone to add or share?